This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good Wednesday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. We've got a lot to get to, including Major League Baseball. The Hall of Fame ballots were in yesterday. Scott Rowland is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And Todd Helton of the Colorado Rockies, who had a fantastic career in Denver, did not get enough votes, came up just a little bit shy. There's a lot of speculation that he'll get in next year. There's only one inductee from the baseball writers that required the 75% threshold, and Scott Rowland got it in his sixth attempt. And Helton was in his fifth attempt, and like I said, people think that he should get it next year. But congratulations to him. He was the Rookie of the Year. He helped the Cardinals win a 2006 World Series. I mean, 17-year career, 8 gold gloves, 7-time All-Star. So Scott Rowland will be the lone inductee, at least from the baseball writer's standpoint, into the Baseball Hall of Fame. But, of course, we are getting back into the NFL spirit as we head into this weekend. Yesterday, we focused on some of the two of the teams that lost, right, and where they go from here. We're going to do that again today. We're going to talk to about the Buffalo Bills in this hour. Later on in the show, we'll focus a little on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, I know with the Dallas Cowboys, look, we've been saying it all week, and I even alluded to it last week as well when they were coming off their win against Tampa Bay. There's just this large target on the Cowboys that's always been there. We always know it. They do things bigger. The media tends to gravitate towards their problems, exemplifies it, enlarges it, makes it more deeper, right? The talk about Mike McCarthy being fired, when you know if any other coach had won 12 games in back-to-back years and had his team in the playoffs in back-to-back years, very unlikely that that conversation would be taking place in a lot of cities in America. But this is Dallas. The owner's 80 years old. He wants to win a Super Bowl. We know there's tremendous pressure there. So the conversation seems normal when, if you were to transplant Mike McCarthy in any city in America, if he was in Tennessee, there would be no conversation in Nashville about firing Mike McCarthy. If he was in Miami, there'd probably be no conversation about that. There wouldn't be very few conversations about him firing, but Dallas is where the spotlight's on. Right? It's a big national team in terms of national exposure and national conversation, and that's what they're at right now. So we're going to talk about the Cowboys and where they go from here. We'll also get to the Buffalo Bills, and we'll be focusing on the games at hand. Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals going to Arrowhead again. They've beaten the Chiefs three times. If you go back to last year, they played late in the season, the regular season, and then met in the AFC Championship game, and then they met again this season, and the Bengals have won all three and won all three by 3 points. So these are close games, but that's not going to be the storyline. The storyline is not going to be this week leading into the game. Joe Burrow and his coolness and playing at Arrowhead in a hostile environment and his connection to his receivers and how good the offensive line has played despite missing starters and the replacements coming in and doing a really good job. That's one part of the storyline, but it's not going to be the storyline. And it's not going to be the storyline on how Kansas City's defense has got to get pressure on Burrow, because in those three losses, Burrow upped his timing and was able to get the ball out a lot quicker thanks to next-gen stats and all of those, you know, inside numbers information. And how can they get a pass rush against Joe Burrow to get to him when he knew it was coming and was able to, again, dial up a different way he was playing than he did against Tennessee, where he got sacked a lot of times in the playoffs. It's not going to be the storyline. What the storyline is going to be, and we all know it, is going to be on the health of Patrick Mahomes. And that's it. That's 1A and 1B when it comes to the AFC Championship game. And that's it. And everything else is great. But until we get a sense on how Patrick Mahomes is going to play on that high ankle sprain, all of it's not going to matter. Because if he plays well, then, again, we can go into the secondary conversations about, okay, can you get a pass rush on Joe Burrow? How the offensive line for the Bengals is holding up? How important will the run game and Joe Mixon be? Those kind of things that we normally talk about. But if he doesn't play well, if he looks shaky, if he looks like he can't really get a good throw off, if all week and the treatment all week didn't really lead to anything, well, we see something that looks like maybe a A-level quarterback at like a B-minus level or a B level that's still good enough to play but not his normal way of playing. if we get a sense that that's not the case, that he's struggling on that ankle, it opens up a whole new set of conversations. How do the Chiefs adjust this? Right? All right, what do? Do you throw short passes? Do you methodically have to go down the field? Is Chad Henne properly warmed up for any moment that Mahomes it furthers the injury by getting tackled? That's going to be it. That's it for the AFC right now, early this week. Now, we may get a sense, but I doubt it. We may get a sense on how he will feel about that ankle, but they're just going to say all the right things. They're not going to really give you the nitty-gritty, dirty details of his high ankle sprain. They'll do everything by protocol. They're not going to hide it. They can't hide it. It's actually against the NFL rules. So if he's dealing with it and it's a questionable status, or it's a doubtful status, or if it's play status, but they'll reveal that. But how comfortable is he? That's going to be the question. And let's say it looks bad. Let's say it really looks bad, but he's able to play on it and they're able to do some things. But yet Kansas City dials up an offensive performance for the ages, where they take that injury and they utilize different schemes and different plays and just a different philosophy on how they're going to move the ball offensively, so that all of a sudden we start going, this might be one of the best offensive play calling given the circumstances that we've seen deep in the playoffs. Mahomes is going to be affected by this injury because he's not going to be able to plan it, and he's not going to be able to, rotate on it and all that stuff. So again, if you're Eric Bieniemy, if you're Andy Reid, and you're devising these schemes and you're sitting there going, how do we utilize what we utilize? It could be one for the ages if they pull off this victory, if we see immediately that he's being affected by this ankle in a way that has to change the offense's look. But let's say it doesn't. All right, then we've got a classic matchup between two of the best quarterbacks in the game right now. So from the AFC standpoint, all of the storylines are going to be great and worth discussing, but it pales in comparison to the injury to Patrick Mahomes. Now, on the flip side in the NFC, Jalen Hurts and the Eagles have had a year that surprised a lot of people. They made the playoffs last season, and this year, they acquired A.J. Brown during a draft trade with the Tennessee Titans. There's a lot of weapons there. They bulked up the defensive line. They bulked up the offensive line. They created a team. They built a team. After winning a Super Bowl a couple of years ago, they were willing to strip it down, head coach, quarterback gone, and build again. And now they're a game away from returning to the Super Bowl. But this is the best defense he's going to be facing in Jalen Hurts. That defense is rolling right now. The 49ers have won 12 straight games. Not all of it's been Brock Purdy. Jimmy Garoppolo is winning his. Brock Purdy now is winning his. But the defense has been consistently good. It's the number one scoring defense in the NFL. And it's going to come in and it's going to limit things and it's going to make scoring difficult. Now, for me, that's my number one storyline, is the 49ers defense, can it carry them to a victory against the Philadelphia Eagles? I'm really curious as to what kind of game we're going to get, because the Eagles defense is really good too. And I doubt we're going to get a 36-33 kind of football game. But I have seen good defense matchups where I've seen games where it just ends up being that way. Right, the offenses find a way, and offenses prevail on that particular day. And if I'm a betting guy, I would lean not. I would lean that it would be more of a defensive struggle for both quarterbacks, given the strength of both defenses. But there's an electricity on both sides of the offense that makes me kind of think that maybe we could get that game that's in the 30s. Not just the low 30s, maybe the high 30s. 38, 35. Right? Because again, you're looking at a 49ers team that, like, think about who could get the ball and think about how they could score. Right? There's, from Kittle to Ayuk to Debo Samuel, and of course, Christian McCaffrey. Right? A lot of ways the 49ers can put the ball in the end zone. And the Eagles have that too. They can run. We see now that they can run with Jalen Hurts. They can run with, Miles Sanders, Darryl Boston. They can throw the ball. There's a lot of things like Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown. So there's great weapons on both sides. I'm leaning to the defense on this game. I'm leaning to the defense. But I wouldn't be blown away if it was in the 30s. If it was the kind of game where the offenses were having a day. But I think the defenses are really strong. to me, that's what the Patrick Mahomes injury has done to this weekend. It's unfortunate that in the Chiefs-Bengals game, we're not getting a real true preview or analytical preview of these two fantastic teams. Because Cincinnati, and this is the one thing that has respected a lot of people around the league. Lou Amarillo has done a fantastic job of scheming against Kansas City the last three times they played them. Understanding who Mahomes is, understanding the threats that Kansas City has, and disguising things up. He had to make that halftime adjustment in the AFC Championship game last year. But he had a lot of tools to use. He had a lot of experience in that game to use. He had a lot of ideas about how to make Patrick Mahomes, as we talked about yesterday, how he made Patrick Mahomes be impatient, right? Wanted to say, look, you want to go down the field methodically? All right, but we trust that you're going to want to take some shots. You have Tyreek Hill in last year's AFC Championship game, and we think you're going to want to go downfield. And they really limited that, and Mahomes was getting impatient and was getting tight and was forcing some throws that he shouldn't have thrown. Well, Tyreek Hill is no longer on the team, and maybe they counter in this chess game by saying, you know what? We knew last year you tightened up downfield so that you forced us to go short. Well, guess what? We got a quarterback with an injury that he's going to have to go short. And then the Bengals are going to have to go, yep, and we'll protect that because we don't think you can go downfield. That's the other thing. Can Patrick Mahomes on that bum ankle stay in the pocket long enough to get downfield plays working? I don't think he can. So I think this is going to be a master chess match between what the Bengals do defensively and how Eric Bieniemy devises an offense on the other side. All right, we'll get to the Hall of Fame voting and Scott Rolen. A lot of people happy about this. Some people aren't, but we'll give you the stats next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Glad you could be with us this morning. All right. Sorry. I get a little crazy sometimes. I did the parent emotional thing last night at my daughter's basketball game. My wife has to calm me down, man. I was getting furious. I got to stop going. I'm so glad she's a senior. Maybe my blood pressure will go down a little bit. All right, so Scott Rolen is going to the Hall of Fame. If you follow this, here's the thing. I know it can get a little confusing because some of you may go, hey, didn't we just hear that Fred McGriff was going to the Hall of Fame?
Crime dog.
Like, why are you saying that Scott Rolen? Okay, so there are different committees that vote. And so Fred McGriff was elected by the Contemporary Baseball Era Committee. What that is? I don't know. Okay, I have no idea. I don't know who makes it up. I don't know what the criteria is. Couldn't care less. I know it's brand new. Couldn't care less. No idea. They just tell me who they vote for, and I go, sure. Okay, great. I guess it'll be, okay, fine. I got to book another person. Does he have a traveling party? What do we got to do here? But the Baseball Writers of America, the Association of America, the BBWAA, they're the big ones. They're the ones that are like, that's every January, they're going, here's our inductees into the Hall. Remember one year they didn't have anybody? Remember that? Remember when they didn't vote anybody into the Hall of Fame? So they voted, and they've calculated the votes. You have to get 75%, and it has to be a pure 75. There's no rounding up. You're 74.9, you're not in. Sorry. Pure 75. And the only one to get that yesterday is Scott Rolen. Now, if you're kind of new to the process, I'll tell you what you get. If you're a member of this, you get a ballot and you're allowed to pick 10 players. Okay. So you vote for 10 players. Now you don't have to vote for 10 players. You can vote for five, you vote three, but you can't vote for more than 10. So what happens is a lot of times is a player will get on the ballot the first year. And let's say they have good numbers, but they're not a surefire Derek Jeter level Hall of Famer, right? They're just not going in on the first ballot. So they're judged by who else is on the ballot. So if you're loaded on a ballot with, again, either surefire Hall of Famers in their first year or second year, like now they're going to get the votes, you may be a guy that goes, okay, I get hardly any votes. Maybe I got 20% of the votes or 15% of the votes. But as the years progress, depending on who's on the ballot and who's coming up, you might get more, right? Now, some people will say, well, if a person isn't a Hall of Famer right away, why are they a Hall of Famer later? Like, for example, Scott Rolen. This is his sixth attempt on the ballot, and now he's a Hall of Famer. Look, why wasn't he a Hall of Famer in year one or two or three? If he's such a Hall of Famer, why did it take him 6 years? Well, again, it's because of the way the ballot process works. So in the first couple of years, he may be in a jumbled group of people that are getting votes. And then there are players that are on it for 10 years, and then they're taken off the ballot. And then they go to other committees. Like, other committees may vote on them, like give them a second chance. But as far as the baseball writers, the baseball association, you're on there for 10 years, and then you're out. And then you're out. You had your chance in 10 years to get 75% of the votes. And if you don't, you don't, you're gone. So if you're looking at a list of players and you go, well, I've always liked Scott Rolen. Right. I mean, he's been there 17 years, 281 batting average, 1,287 RBIs, has over 300 home runs. I always liked him. And now I can vote for him more consistently. And that's what happened to Scott Rolen. Now, Todd Helton was also on the ballot, and he got just a little less than 75. So he's not going to the Hall of Fame, but he's likely going next year. When the way they projected on who's going to be on the ballot and with the way the balloting worked now, there's a good chance that Todd Helton, who played all of his time at the Colorado Rockies, will be enshrined into Cooperstown. So in Scott Rolen's case, Scott Rolen was a Rookie of the Year. He was also on the 2006 St. Louis Cardinals World Series team. Remember, that was the year the Cardinals won like 86 games or something. They didn't win a ton, but Tony La Russa and the Cardinals really turned it on in the postseason and then beat the Detroit Tigers in the World Series. And Rolen was on that team. He also played with the Phillies. He played with the Reds. He played with the Blue Jays. And like I said, he reached some milestones, 300 home runs. I think he had 500 doubles. He had over 1,200 RBIs. These are good numbers. But I think with Rolen, I think the one thing that puts him in the Hall of Fame is he was a fantastic defensive third baseman. One of the best. Statistically, and depending on how you want to dig into the details, I mean, baseball statistics are nuts. But when you dig into the details, he's one of the best defensive third basemen in Major League Baseball in history. Depending on how you read the numbers. 8 gold gloves. Just fantastic defensive player and solid offensive, although he never led an offensive category. But it was good enough. It was good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. So, again, it feels like the last couple of, I don't know, couple of, I mean, like decade to decade and a half, the whole thing has always been about the certain steroid players and how they get voted on and whatnot. But in this case, you got Scott Rolen. Todd Helton didn't make it. There were 14 players on the ballot that returned this year, and one of them was Alex Rodriguez. So Alex Rodriguez, who served an entire year suspended for performance-enhancing drugs, definitely didn't get close to the 75 mark to be a Hall of Famer. So the enshrinement will be this summer in Cooperstown, and Fred McGriff, the crime dog who got in on another committee, will be joining Scott Rolen. I think that's it. I'm not sure if there's another one.
No, it's just those two.
I don't follow it super closely in terms of what other committees are out there that have a say in this thing. To me, here's the thing, and this is going to sound rude, and I don't mean to sound rude to any player that gets into the Hall of Fame via another ballot. Like, when it comes to like college football, I pay attention to two polls, the AP and the committee poll when it finally starts coming out. But during the regular season, before we get the committee, I only pay attention to the AP. I couldn't care less what the coaches' poll is. I couldn't care less. It's done by SIDs. It's not done by coaches. I couldn't care less where they put teams. The Associated Press is the one I care about. The other ones that were like always down the line, don't even know they exist. Couldn't care less. This is the way I feel about the Hall of Fame. To me, this is the vote. This is the vote. The Baseball Writers Association of America, That's the only one that matters to me. And this is no offense to anybody that gets on the contemporary baseball committee or the veterans committee, because some of those players are extremely important. But and I'll feel good if I find out that a certain player who had been snubbed for 10 years on the ballot gets in and I like them. But this is the only one I pay attention to every January. Where are they going with this? So that's it. I hope that doesn't sound disrespectful to the crime dog, but I'm sorry. I don't even remember when that vote took place. I don't even remember, you know, how it came about. I don't even know what the criteria is. But I know 75%. I know how the process works for this one. I wait for it every January, and there it is. And Scott, remember when it was Pete Rose? Remember all those years with Pete Rose?
Yep.
Pete Rose wasn't on the ballot. Well, people write him in, et cetera, et cetera. And then that got pushed aside for steroids. Once the performance-enhancing drug scandal started hitting Major League Baseball, we were wondering what that would look like when those guys retired and were going to be on the ballot.
And then we endured 10-plus years of McGuire, Sosa, yeah, Bonds, Clemens all being on the ballot and never getting in. And we kept sitting there. Remember, I think it was last year. It's like, oh, you know, this will probably be Bonds and Clemens. I mean, it's their last chance, but might be their closest one yet. And no.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So and I then, remember.
You know, just real quick. And then they were on that that – I guess veterans committee. I don't even know what the committee's called. The super special committee.
There's another special committee.
Yeah, that Fred McGriff was on, and they didn't get in on that one.
Yeah, this is a little. It's like,
and that was their contemporaries.
I don't mind these. I mean, again, it's a Hall of Fame. It's not the end of the world. I know people are like, is it the Hall of Good? You know what? I don't care who's in the Hall of Fame, who's not. I think there's some. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. Let me just say that. Yeah. I can debate it. I can have a legitimate argument, but I'm not going to lose sleep if somebody gets in and somebody gets out. I'm not going to not go to the Baseball Hall of Fame if I'm ever in Cooperstown because so-and-so made it, right? But I think Philip pointed this out on Twitter, and good job on this one. It's like, okay, if you want in, you'll have to get in with them. You're not getting in with us. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a way these voters are like, yeah, but you know what? I'll let the Veterans Committee take care of this. I'll let the Contemporary Era Committee take care of this. I'm not voting for him. I'm not putting him on this ballot.
And they went with Scott Rowland, probably the safest choice possible. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, is he a Hall of Famer? I don't know.
I was reading debates about it this morning, yeah, and I'm like, you know what? And then, you know what it was?
But I felt like they felt the need to put someone in.
Maybe so. They got beat up pretty badly the year that they didn't bring anybody into the Hall of Fame. People were like, you couldn't find one, and they're like, well, you know what? It's not automatic that people get in. And they're like, yeah, but nobody?
But isn't this the second year in a row, too? They only did one.
Yeah, they only did one. Yeah.
Last year it was just Ortiz.
Wasn't there a time where there would be like three or four of them?
Yes.
And you're like, wow, look at this ceremony. This is going to be great. That was like two guys going in. And one is on another committee entirely. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. We'll talk Buffalo Bills coming up this hour and where they go from here. We've been focusing the early part of this week on the teams that are no longer with us in the NFL playoffs because I find what there's kind of their stories are a little fascinating in terms of the window and players and what was going on. Maddie Glab is going to join us, Buffalo Bills team reporter. She's going to join us at 45 past the hour and discuss the Bills and what's going on. What happened? Why did you lose by 17 points at home?
On your home turf in the snow.
Exactly. One note on the Hall of Fame. I remember having an interview with Pete Rose years ago, and it was nothing more than just Rose was promoting a TV show and whatever. And I remember asking him, it was the year that the baseball writers didn't vote anybody in. And I asked him for his thoughts on that. I said, what's your thoughts on no one getting elected to the Hall of Fame? And he was really testy about it because I wasn't trying to poke him like, why aren't you on there? But he was like, I don't know. I don't know how this works. I don't know how. And I paused and I said, stop. You do know how this works. I was like, yeah, you do. I was like, you've been talking about it for a decade. It was the only time I ever really got contentious with a big athlete. Cause I was like furious. Like I was like, no, don't give me that. I have no idea on anything. Like you've been spending forever
lobbying for the voters to put you in. You knew how it worked. You knew the process. You knew who you had to go to. You knew who had to convince. And now you're like, I don't know. I think Pete Rose still to this day would love to be in the Hall of Fame, right? I don't think he's ever gotten over it. He'd love to be in the Hall of Fame. It's like, it's a place, it's enshrinement forever, right? That's the way it is. So Scott Rolen and Fred McGriff this July. So enjoy both of those players when they're in the Hall of Fame. So later on in this hour, we're going to talk about Dallas Cowboys. And are you getting a little tired of this sort of hyperbole that is around this team and what the Dallas Cowboys have to do to get to a Super Bowl? As I mentioned earlier, okay, you want to talk about Mike McCarthy? Okay, you can talk about Mike McCarthy. With some things that he did right, some things that he did wrong, you want to blame him for this, you want to blame him for that, fine. Here's my question all the time when people want to make a dumpster fire of their playoff team. You better land it. You better get it right. I'll give you an example of a team that did do it right. For years, from 1997 to early 2000s, Tony Dungy had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the postseason all the time. He had a team that had Warren Sapp. He had a team with John Lynch, Rondé Barber. They had Warwick Dunn, Mike Allstott, right? They had Trent Dilfer. They were winning enough games to be part of the playoff equation. And then they would lose. And Tampa Bay went from a fan base that was so accustomed to always losing, always being terrible, to kind of wondering, are we ever going to turn the corner? Like, are we ever going to get to the next place? They got John Gruden, and they won a Super Bowl. And they looked and saw a guy that could kick him up. Now, I'm glad Tony Dungy was able to go to Indianapolis and win a Super Bowl. But the reality of it is when you go after a new head coach, you have no idea what is going to happen. They're not going to keep the same people on staff. They're going to want to bring in their own guys. They're going to change some things up. You brought them in because they're not there to just continue. It's like, imagine if you opened a restaurant and you hired a chef. And the chef created a menu. And you're like, we like this menu, chef. But then after a while, the business is struggling a little bit. And then you go, I think we're going to have to part ways. And then you bring a brand new 5-star chef, whatever it is, Michelin star, whatever they call it. I think that's for restaurants. But whatever they are. And you give them the old chef's menu and you go, can you just make these dishes just a little bit better? He probably wouldn't take the job. He'd probably go, no. I'm not doing what he did and making him better. I'm going to give you a whole new set of dishes that I've been working on. Have you ever tasted my roast duck? It's fantastic. I got a little honey glaze and a little ginseng. It was great. Tastes wonderful. When it comes to NFL coaches, and people are like, they should fire Mike McCarthy. Who are you going to get? Sean Payton? Is Sean Payton going to run exactly what Mike McCarthy just was running, but just a little better?
Well, if the rumors are true, Sean Payton may not even be.
Right.
What team is going to take him?
Right. Sean Payton is at a point now where he was a hot commodity, and now nobody seems to really, really want him.
Yeah. Well, and the jobs that he wanted aren't available.
Right. So he might just go back to TV.
He's going to go back to TV.
Exactly.
He doesn't want that Denver job.
So what do you want? You want Kellen Moore? You want to promote him? Okay. All right. Is that the kick a first-year head coach? Is the kick this Cowboys team and their very small window needs? Now, don't get me wrong. If you have legitimate reasons why Mike McCarthy shouldn't have his job, I'll listen to them. But what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that Mike McCarthy should keep his job because he did a great job. I'm saying Mike McCarthy shouldn't lose his job because you think somebody around the corner is going to elevate this team. Because you better come up with a name of somebody who can. And that I think that list is pretty short. And no matter how good of an offensive coordinator somebody is or how good a defensive coordinator somebody is, I want to see somebody be able to go, I absolutely guarantee that they can take the next step. Dan Quinn, right? Dan Quinn's up for jobs. He's their defensive coordinator. You want to promote him? Okay. But is he the guy that's going to take this team to the next spot? Like I said, if you took Mike McCarthy in the exact same situation and you put him on 25 other teams around the NFL, no one would be talking about this. People would say, like, well, We're getting close. We're getting close. This coach has got us in the playoffs. Now they have a win under their belt. But the reality of it is it's not that team. The team is the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones, 80 years old, wants to get back to a Super Bowl. Now this is almost like a morbid thought. This is why people are really uncomfortable. They act like Jerry Jones is 80 and he's got like 2 years left to live. So it has to happen now. Well, tomorrow's not promised to any of us, right? Jerry Jones is 80, and I know he's closer to the finish line than a lot of other owners, but again, tomorrow's not promised to anybody. Jerry Jones might live to be 87. He might live to be 90. I have no idea, but they're putting it in the context as if Jerry Jones is on his deathbed and his dying wish is to see the Cowboys in the Super Bowl. They better hurry up about it. The Cowboys are in an NFC where they just watched two things take place ahead of them. They looked up and saw two things. They saw an organization in the Philadelphia Eagles win a Super Bowl and then get rid of some of the key people that helped them win a Super Bowl. The head coach, the backup quarterback that won the Super Bowl, and the starting quarterback he had to replace, who they drafted in the first round and high in the first round. They started fresh. They said, this is not going to be sustainable, so we're going to have to rebuild a bit. And quickly. And quickly in the NFL is where they are right now. They're also seeing the 49ers. And how Kyle Shanahan and that 49er system has been able to win with two quarterbacks in the last few years. If you want to put Brock Purdy in that level. Now, Trey Lance, we don't know. There's just not enough evidence of what Trey Lance will or can do at the NFL level. But with Jimmy Garoppolo, a guy that people are like, well, he's just a game manager. Well, they were winning games with a game manager. And now they're winning games with a rookie quarterback who was drafted last overall. So he's got to, there's, and then, oh, by the way, forget that side of the ball because we have one of the most exciting players in the NFL. How about this? We have a defense that's the best in the league. And that's what they're building up against. And even in that scenario, Dallas, San Francisco this past weekend was about an even matchup. It was about an even matchup. Again, there better be a solid plan B. I'm not going to use the marriage analogy because I think marriage is a little different than being in a regular relationship where you're just dating somebody. But let's say you're in a really good relationship. But the relationship gets rocky. And you evaluate whether or not you want to either fight for the relationship to make it better, or do you want to dump this relationship and then start again? And start going out and going on dates, and meeting people, having some work not work, right? Going back to the whole, oh, I guess I got to start dressing better, right? That kind of thing. If you're a Cowboys fan, remember that sort of internal reaction that people have to sports failure. What's on the other side of the coin? There's no guarantee. You're just going to get something fresh, and something fresh is always fun, right? It's always fun. Something new, something different is always exciting. Now, Mike McCarthy, again, has delivered back-to-back 12-win seasons. I'll be honest with you, that should have been good enough to win the division. But the Eagles had a phenomenal year, and a surprisingly phenomenal year. But it would have been good enough to win the division. But again, when you break this all down, figure out where your next step is, because the next step could take you two steps backwards. And if this is all about Jerry and getting the old man a Super Bowl, he might be further away with the wrong hire. All right, we'll talk Bills and their future next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so we've been focusing the early part of this week on the teams that, again, left the playoffs and what their future is. We did a couple of teams yesterday. Later on this hour, our show, we'll have the Dallas Cowboys, but the Buffalo Bills exited the playoffs on Sunday. Matty Glab joins us, BuffaloBills.com team reporter, to talk about the Bills and their future. And she joins us on a Progressive guest line. It's brought to you by Progressive. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. How are you, Matty?
I'm doing good, you know, We're still dealing with the playoff loss here. I think everybody was pretty bummed to see the Bills lose in the divisional round of the playoffs, especially with the season that they went through. I think everybody was really holding on for hope that they could make a run in the Super Bowl. But the guys went through a lot this season, so hopefully they'll come back next year ready to go and even better.
From the standpoint of the game itself, I mean, okay, I think at this point, no result should be that surprising, and given what was on the other side, it wasn't that surprising. But I think a lot of people are surprised as the way it happened. It felt like Cincinnati dominated from the start of the game all the way through. Was that a surprising outcome?
I think it was really surprising. I don't think any of us were really expecting that. Not that the Bengals aren't good at all, because they're such a great football team, but I think all of us thought that it would be toe-to-toe. It would be an air raid type of game from both ends of the football and from both teams, really. Of course, the snow in the forecast and the snow on the ground affected things a little bit, but not enough to where the Bills only scored 10 points. You know, the Bengals put 27 points on the scoreboard, and I think everybody thought it would be a little bit more evenly matched up from the Bills side of things, and they just really couldn't get it going. I mean, the Bengals get out to a 14-0 lead in the beginning of the game, and that's when you kind of felt the energy go out of the stadium for a little bit, and then Josh Allen was able to score and make it a one-score game, and they were able to do that, you know, twice with the Tyler Bass field goal, but it just seemed like it was too hard for the Bills on offense and on defense for them. And you want to be playing your best football at the end of the season. And in that game, it was not their best football. It was a team that we didn't recognize. And a lot of the mistakes that they made were uncharacteristic. I think we saw a few things happen toward the end of the season in terms of them not playing their best football. But you can't win the Super Bowl if you're not playing your best football. And they unfortunately were not.
I think Joe Burrow, when he was asked this question about his window, he says, the window is my career. I think you can make the same statement about Josh Allen, but the people around him, what's the current situation about what the roster will look like next year? Who may be staying, who may be going? Is everybody that's important under contract? How do the Bills look as they head into the offseason of 2023?
Yeah, we talked to our general manager, Brandon Bean, yesterday, and he was asked, you know, as long as Josh Allen is on the team, does that mean that you'll always have a shot at the Super Bowl? And he said, you know, it's not as simple as that. Of course, Josh Allen is an athlete, is a player that is unlike most in the NFL, and he's the reason why the Bills got as far as they did this season. But it's also about the guys who are around Josh Allen, and then the defense as well, who helps Josh Allen in getting him back to the field to do what he does best. The Bills have 21 unrestricted free agents. That is a huge, huge number. And they know it's going to be tough with their cap situation. Brandon Bean said yesterday they haven't really gotten a floor or as high as the cap could be. They usually at this point have a range that they're expecting the salary cap number to be, but due to a couple TV deals, they're still waiting to hear what that range of number could be. And they pretty much know right now they're around 240 is what he said. And he said he knows the cap is not going to be 240. So they're going to have to work their way in getting under the cap. So it's going to be tough for this team. They're paying a lot of great players, and they're going to have to find ways, Brandon Bean said, to be creative, whether that's restructuring contracts or whether that's low budget free agents or really hitting on the draft. I think the draft is going to be really important for them this year in terms of finding ways to get under the cap, because they do have some big name players that are up. And Brandon Bean said, you know, we want to re-sign some of those guys, but we're going to have to get creative with how we do that.
Von Miller and his injury, what effect did that have on the defense in the latter part of the season, including the playoffs?
I mean, you saw the stats in the beginning of the season when Von Miller was a part of the defensive line. They were getting and generating pressure at a much higher rate than they did without Von Miller as a part of that defensive line. He is such a great player that when you're playing without him, there is going to be a drop-off. And I think the Bills saw that, especially toward the end of the season when they started to play some really good teams and the stakes got higher in terms of making it to the playoffs and seeding and then being in the playoffs. you sign a guy like Von Miller to be able to contend and play in the playoffs and the Super Bowl. We saw what he did when he was on the LA Rams and the game that he put up in the Super Bowl with a couple of sacks there. He was a force. He's the guy that you want on the field at the end of the game to finish things. And the Bills didn't have that. Was it just because Von Miller wasn't a part of the defensive line? No. They were without Daquan Jones, I think, who was a really important player to that defensive line, especially in the interior with how he was able to hold things up. So I think this defensive line is still a young defensive line. I think they're going to get better as time goes on. I think Greg Rousseau took a step forward this year, which was really important. The Bills are going to need more out of him next season. So hopefully Von Miller comes back as early as possible, healthy and ready to go. Brandon Bean said he wasn't ready to put an exact date on when he would return, but they're expecting to have him back for the majority of next season.
How would you describe this year? I mean, this outside of the DeMar Hamlin thing, that's tops always. That's probably 1, 2, and 3 on the list of things that off the field this team had to deal with. But then there's the trip, you know, the having to go to Detroit to play a game when the snow is happening in Buffalo and injuries and whatnot. There's a exhausting is probably not the right word, because again, when you're talking about a player that you're close to that is struggling for his life, that's probably not the right word. But there is also, that's a lot for a team to take. There was a lot of things for this team to take this season. How would you describe what they went through from top to bottom?
You know, they went through so much, from the injuries to the games being moved to 3 road games in 12 days. Brandon Bean, I keep going back to his press conference because sure. He had a lot of great nuggets from that, but he said that in all his years of being in the NFL, which is a long time, he has never been in a season like that before, just with everything they had to deal with. They had some of their best players who weren't on the field for the majority of the season. Micah Hyde, their safety, went out in week 2. Von Miller goes out. Tre'Davious White is returning from an ACL tear and just wasn't the same because he didn't have enough time on the field. Hopefully that's a different case next season when he truly feels like he's 100% and has all of his confidence back. But then Josh Allen has this elbow injury, and he told us when we talked to him on locker cleanout day that he really didn't start to feel the same mechanically up until a couple weeks ago. So it's all of these things that kind of got strung together in a season where you might experience 1 or 2 of these things, but they experienced all of it. And they don't want to say that's an excuse for why the season ended the way it did, but it definitely had a factor in everything. The exhaustion of the DeMar Hamlin situation, dealing with that, being stuck in Chicago on Christmas Eve, missing Christmas morning with your kids, all of these things take a toll on you. And I think it took a toll on this team. Is it an excuse? By no means it's not, because right. You're going to face adversity during the season. But I think all of this definitely did impact the team. I think it does make them stronger. It does make them closer as a unit. And hopefully they'll kind of be able to harness all of this moving forward to next season. You know, Josh Allen said when we talked to him, getting DeMar Hamlin back is a silver lining in all of this.
Absolutely. Matt, great stuff. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for the insight. And I know, again, Bean spoke yesterday, so thank you for the nuggets of information there. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, guys.
Matty Glab, again, BuffaloBills.com. And like we said, I think that this definitely was a different-looking team late in the season. And, yeah, DeMar Hamlin, 1, 2, and 3 of the obstacles that they had to go. Remember, when they had that game canceled, I mean, people can look at the schedule and see a canceled game, but that wasn't a technically, like, an off week. I mean, it wasn't like you had to prepare for the Patriots, but they didn't prepare like they normally. Imagine if that game had been played and nothing happened, right? There was no issue. They played a great game against Cincinnati. Win or lose, doesn't matter. They would have gone back to Buffalo. They would have taken the day off, and then they would have come back, and they would have really, really, really focused on the Patriots. But instead, they went back to Buffalo, and 100% of their attention, and rightfully so, was on what happened on the field and to their teammate. And all of their thoughts were that. And they were going through a walkthrough, and they're still talking about it, getting updates of what was going on in the harrowing days after that collapse, where we were wondering if he was going to be okay, and he was coming out of this coma, and they had to rest his brain, and was he on oxygen? Was he off oxygen? Was his heartbeat? They're thinking about that all the time. And so they go through this week of semi-workout and semi-preparation with, you know, 90%, if you want to use a number, on that and 10% on probably what they're seeing on film. And it, they just never looked the same from that point on. They did not look like the same Bills team that had won six straight games leading into that Monday night clash against Cincinnati. They never looked sharp. They never looked ready to go in the three games that they played. And it was, again, a 27-10 win.